right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Red Ice Radio. Thank you for tuning in to this live program on bbsradio.com. My name is Henrik Palmgren, and I'm coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. And I am the editor and of the websites red-ice.net and redicecreations.com. This is our weekly show here on BBS Radio, and you can now hear us at our new time, which is, of course, Sundays, 2 p.m. Pacific, that's 10 p.m. Greenwich time. So I'm glad that you are here today. And as probably most of you tuning in know by now, we are currently featuring a series with Michael Therrien on Red Ice Radio. And we are right in the middle of it. This is our fourth show together, and we have primarily been looking at Michael's research that is on his astrotheology pages on Michael's website, which, by the way, is tarotscopes.com. And in a minute, we're going to do a short summary of what we have been talking about so far to, you know, remind ourselves what we have been going through. And if you have missed any of the programs, you can always head on over to my site and go into the radio section there and find out more about how to download and listen to those programs. And also during these episodes, we have been featuring a contest, and we will continue with that today also. We still have three DVDs left from Michael's excellent Origins and Oracles series, and we want to hand out those three remaining in the three remaining programs that we have in the series. So stay tuned, as we will do part four of our contest about halfway into this program, and we will give out the numbers and so forth later on, so stay tuned. All right, so let's bring Michael on and kick off this program, and welcome back, Michael, and as always, thank you so much for being here, sharing your research, enlightening us, and...
thank you, Henrik. Thanks for the invitations.
Yeah,
good to be back.
It's excellent to have you here, and... by the way, I saw your lecture at the Granada Forum last week.
Yeah, that's right. Excellent. Recently in Los Angeles. That's 3 years, or no, it's actually about 5 years since I was back in Los Angeles. I actually started my public speaking down there, and you know, that was a great opportunity to get to share some new material.
Yeah,
and also, you know, encapsulate some of the themes. Also, very much in, you know, the idea is to also keep it topical with what is going on right now in the Middle East. You know, we've been talking about it on this show.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, but again, we have a very crazy situation here, and I always look at chaotic types of situations. In one way, I look at them as positive, because in a way, that might then start waking a lot of people up who are not awakened.
Yeah.
It might get them to be interested in history. It might get them to ask certain questions of who are these presidents, why have they been lying to us, you know, and what is really going on in the world? How did all of this tribulation and conflict, you know, happen?
Yeah.
Who are the Israelis? Who are the Palestinians? How did this all begin, you know? Because so again, as tragic as it is, but I've said it so many times before, it seems that tragedy is one of the things that does help the human race to awaken, you know.
Unfortunately, yes,
isn't it?
That seems to be the case.
Right, but there you have it.
Yeah. Let's do a little summary here.
Okay.
Before we dive into the content today, and we can say that last time we explored, you know, the actual origins of Judaism, and so that it is Egyptian, and we also tackled the Jewish bashing stigma that which, you know, the establishment used now to silence people who delve into these matters, and once we find that Judaism is Egyptian, and that it is pharaohs and royal dynasties that we are exposing, then these questions or accusations of anti-Semitism never arise in the first place.
That's right.
So that's great. And we show that the masters of the game now here have used clever camouflage and creating a thing known as Judeo-Christianity to hide behind. And we saw that Freemasonry and Judaism are considered one and the same by those in the know. But again, this Judaism is not which is known officially by common folk. Maybe the same way that, you know, Nazism was not of German invention, but of British.
That's exceptionally important, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And the most major revelation concerning the identity of Jehovah and the contract made between this God and his priest is really between Aton and his commanders, those descendants of the Levitical Israelite pharaohs of Egypt. And maybe we can, you know, begin to talk a little bit about these dynasties of kings more deeply. But before we go into that, to tie in, as we said, you know, current events here, it would be excellent to go into the archaeological evidence for the physical Israel, because as you have said, this is another big lie, and very little archaeological evidence exists showing this today. So maybe we can begin there.
Well, you're absolutely right, and I'm glad that you did that summary, because say somebody's coming in for the first time, you know, it's very important to get clued in to several of the things that you just said, which is that, you know, these individuals do use camouflage. So what you're seeing on television now with these hijacked terms, yeah, like Israel, you know, and so on, these are terms that are very little to do with what people are thinking that they have to do with. So there's a certain camouflage going on. There's a certain deception. It's in plain view to anyone who knows history. The second one is, of course, that the Judaism, because the word Jew itself, J-E-W, wasn't used until the 1800s. It's a very recent term. Before that, scholars used the term Judaic or Judaism.
Yeah.
You know, and what we have to understand is that within Judaism, just as it's the same thing in Christianity, you have an elite, a cult, a very powerful priestly order that goes way back. They even say that priestly order, the Levites, goes back to the time of Mount Sinai, where a certain oral tradition was handed down to a group of elders, and that these elders then steer the rest of the ignorant people. Because even in their own work, they say that the average Jew is ignorant. He doesn't know anything. He's unaware that the Talmud, you see, is the center of Judaism. Because the average Jew thinks that the Torah is you know, the center of Judaism. And of course, we would wish in one way that it was, because just like a Christian understands the Bible. But the thing is that there's a secret hidden tradition within Judaism, and they have five grades, and at the top of the grades that you reach, it's the full understanding of the magical, hidden, secret elite tradition that was handed down at Mount Sinai to these elite Jews. And, yeah, and these individuals are the, we know them as the Pharisees, but before they were known as the Pharisees, they were called the Levites. And in my work, I exposed that these Levites were also then known as the Gaonim, and that the Gaonim are the descendants of the cult of Aton, and are a very, very powerful group that is responsible for creating these dialectics so that people are in total conflict. So you have the Sadducees and you have the Pharisees, you know. Then later on you have Paul's Christianity, which is a concoction, a Roman version of the same thing.
Yeah.
It's very important to understand that the kind of Judaism that was the old world, Old Testament type of Judaism was on its way out. It was being scaled back. It was no longer useful to the Gaonim. It had done its trick to bring into subservience the people of the East.
Yeah.
But it was having no effect on the Western Gentile people. Now this is crucial. So that the person that we refer to as Paul,
yeah,
was one of these Gaonim, or was a Gentile in their employ, who worked out of Rome, who had a certain limited knowledge of the Middle East, but was being handed knowledge. The knowledge that you read about St. Paul was not his own. And the whole story of his conversion at Damascus is nonsense. Even the Jewish scholars, you know, have seen through that yeah, this is just a total nonsense. And many of the things that he wrote which has become the New Testament are lies. They're things that are not consistent with what was going on historically, archaeologically, or even theologically in the old world. But it was imperative for these individuals that were behind the old Talmudic form of Judaism, the old Pharisaic tradition, that in the New Testament, Jesus is meant to be against. And it was very important that the new Christ, the new Jesus, which was a pagan idea, of course, had to look on paper that he was against the old Pharisaic tradition. But what I'm saying is it was the Pharisees who were creating this Jesus, you know, image. But it was very important that they were never going to find an inroads into the Western culture. They were never going to be accepted as a civilized people unless they had a God, unless they had a tradition that was, you know, was able to be accepted in Western lands. Yeah. And the story, why I'm going into this, is because the story of how Paul doctored the old pagan Mithras, Ahura Mazda, the Horus, you see, how he took the Hebrew Messiah. And by the way, the Hebrew Messiah was nothing more than a military leader, a commander. It had no spiritual component whatsoever.
Hmm.
He was purely a rebellious leader who would lead the Judeans out of captivity or bondage on a physical, political sense. It's later that, the term got hijacked and was, you know, made into something more than it actually was.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the wholesale hijacking of terms that if you actually get into their true historical meaning, you start to unravel an incredible story there.
Yeah.
But one of the most important things that we could probably deal with now is what you said in the introduction. Unbelievably, you know, because we're talking about the camouflage and we're talking about the tranquilization of people who just believe whatever they're told by the very people who are the conspiratorial ones. We just suck it all in. And yet, in the physical sciences, in archaeology, I mean, despite what the History Channel shows people, right, and despite what some of the television malarkey is, the top archaeologists have not discovered Jerusalem, have not discovered any of the ancient places that are mentioned in the Bible. They have found little to no evidence of the so-called chosen holy people. Now, why is this important? It's because, look, how does it tie in with Michael Tesorian's work? If this guy is going out of his way to tell everybody that, look, of course you're going to find no evidence because these people were Israelite pharaohs of Egypt, who from the moment of their expulsion from Egypt, have been, you know, hiding their origins and working in the background, and perhaps even because they were filthy rich, they were extremely wealthy people, they were able to co-opt, you know, the dignitaries of Assyria and Babylonia. So they were able to work behind the scenes. They had merchant class status. They had theological status and rank, not high enough to really impress the top rank of other countries, because those people would have seen them as renegades. You know, the story was out.
Mm-hmm.
But it might have been enough, Henrik, to impress the lower dignitaries and to be able to, you know, marry in with those families and have a certain kind of a camouflage behind very powerful, rich families. They would add their own wealth to those families.
Yeah.
And, of course, in every... It's like an island or in America. You always have an opposing group. Don't you? You have the aristocracy who leads, and then you have their opponents. So the cult of Aton has been very clever to know that, yes, you may not be able to be received with trumpets there in the courts of the top brass, because those people respect Egypt and know what kind of people you are. I mean, the game's out of the bag there. But hey, every dynasty, every empire, every emperor, every king, every rich family has enemies.
Yeah.
So the cult of Aton are clever enough, and I believe it's these kinds of machinations date from this time. And they have the money, and they have the clout, and they have the promise. So somehow, without going into a long story here, they got into being assisted and helped. But it comes back to our story. As part of their camouflage, they have created a book that has been edited I don't know how many hundreds of times, especially by people like Francis Bacon and so many other, you know, major Illuminati figures, and even today it's been subtly reinterpreted and not so subtly reinterpreted. But from that book and from that duplicitous scholarship has come this idea that there was these wonderful, you know, citadels and incredible cities and all sorts of landmarks, literally over there in Canaan. And anyone who's read my work knows that civilization, as we are told, could not possibly have arisen outside of Egypt from the lands that we're told in Palestine, Canaan, Syria, Jordan, and even in Iran. What you had was outposts of civilization, but you couldn't have a civilization come from there. It was impossible. There was very little in the way of mineral ore, and there was very little in the way of water. Now, what do we find out when we go to the great scholars in theology? We find books like the Dead Sea Scrolls, which cut right at the root of many of the fundamentals of the theological aspect. So the theological aspect, what Christians have to understand is this, that even your theological principles that are laid down in the Bible, the dogma, have been assaulted massively since the discovery of the Gnostic Gospels and the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah.
So you better know your stuff when you're talking. Then along comes people like Jordan Maxwell, who can really take you apart. who've really done some homework that even transcends what has been known from the Dead Sea Scrolls and these things that were also creations, you know, of relatively recent times. These are people who've gone into studying the ancient mythologies of the world, the ancient gods and the Solar King. And we have Mustafa Gadala revealing, you know, that the ancient sun kings of Egypt used terms like Christ.
Yeah.
You see, and all of this. So we have a massive assault on the theology, and we've been talking about that in other shows.
Yeah, yeah.
But what do you find? You even have an assault upon the physicality of it from the top archaeologists that exist. And the one that I think that people ought to know about is Professor Thomas Thompson. This is Thomas L. Thompson. Mm. And he wrote, there's been many books written on this kind of subject. And he wrote the book, The Mythic Past, Biblical Archaeology, and the Myth of Israel.
Mm.
Now, this is a fairly recent book. And this man also suffered, of course, the usual job loss and ridicule.
Mm.
And his book is called The Mythic Past, Biblical Archaeology, and the Myth of Israel. And I want to read a few little passages from his book to get people to wake up from the delirium, to realize that under all the hoopla, there is not even the physical evidence for any kind of original people of Israel or chosen people or anything. And this, of course, once you discover this, it opens the door to the real story.
Yeah.
It's not about bashing history. It's bashing false history. It's making people understand that there is a false history that has been put in front of people.
Yeah.
And this ties in, you see, Henrik, so much to how is it that somebody like myself can take on a project like proving the Irish origins of civilization if you don't first deal with all the other origins of civilization stories, which have almost no, you know, true validity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not a person who comes in and just, you know, again, dumps my particular theories on all the rest of the theories that are out there so that we have this encrusted, you know, we have this totally encrusted form of knowledge which nobody can ever get through.
Yeah, we can never sort out that.
That's thing. Right. So one has to go down and say, okay, let's try to deconstruct some of the lies.
Yeah.
Just like people have had to do with recently in Nazi Germany. But look what's happened to people who try to unravel the truth about the Nazi Germany. Where do they end up? Where is David Irving right now?
Exactly.
Where is Ernst Zundel? You know?
Yeah.
Where is, you know, Farrasson from France? You know, what happens to people when they even try? It's like at the LA talk, you saw me say it in that very speech, that the teacher is a threat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The word teacher should always be synonymous with the word threat. And if people don't believe that, just try even coaching your own family against the, you know, dangers of fluoride or the dangers of vaccinations, you see.
Yeah.
Or to stop butchering animals for you know, your daily food or whatever it might be. Then you suddenly will find out that you're an immediate threat.
Oh, my God, yes, of course.
Try going to work and saying, look, I don't want to have 100 vaccinations just so I have the privilege of working here. I'm not in the fear, you know, of transmitted diseases, so I'm not going to jump through all these stupid hoops. You'll be fired immediately.
Yeah.
You'll be considered the black sheep of the family. You'll be considered the black sheep at work if you don't go along to get along. So we have tremendous consensus trance. So, you know, again, the idea then, but I still believe that it's very important to deconstruct the lies that surround people before you add another theory.
That must be done, I think.
I really do believe this should be done. So let me just start with one interesting quote. He says, of course there was an Israel, says Professor Thompson. The name itself is used already at the close of the late Bronze Age on an Egyptian monument to refer to the people of Canaan, right? That Pharaoh Meramtah's military campaign into Palestine fought against. But this is not the Israel that the Bible deals with. So they're saying that this term Israel, or a word very like it, did appear in the into the 19th dynasty. So it's already after the 18th dynasty in the time of Akhenaten that we have been exploring in these programs. So the very first time that the word Israel ever appears, it's already outside of Egypt. It's in Canaan, but it's enemies of the Pharaoh Meremptah, which again fits with exactly what I've been saying. There were enemies outside Egypt after the 18th dynasty, and it was Akhenaten and his gang, who were people who were used to using the term Israel, because we have explored on this show what that term really meant.
Yeah.
It was a group of priestly people, just like the word, they will accept that Levite. Oh, absolutely, Levite means the priestly class.
Yeah.
You say the word Kohen to the Hebrews, and they say, absolutely, that represents the priestly class. you go back and you use the term Hebrew, and they'll go, well, okay, we accept that that meant, that was a term that meant, you know, the great, the interpreter.
Oh.
The interpreter of the mysteries.
Okay.
Although, as we said, it was, it, the word Hebrew specifically is very interesting because they, it was mistranslated on purpose. I believe it was a deliberate mistranslation of the word Ibaru to the word Apiru. And the word Apiru actually meant the invaders, or the foreigners, or the lepers, you see? There was a very interesting duplicity, a very interesting hijacking taking place with the word Hebrew, but we probably don't have time to go into that. But the idea is that these Israelites who were outside Egypt were once Egyptian in origin.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Now, Professor Thompson goes on to say, nowhere in the Torah, or also in the Pentateuch, or the five books of the Bible, is there any mention of Jerusalem, let alone a temple anywhere in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And to a Jew, the Torah is God's law and blueprint for all mankind's peaceful existence. All right? Now, this is by an author, actually, Stephen St. John wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen St. John wrote this, that the holiest book of the Bible does not, okay, there's no mention of a temple of Jerusalem or a Jerusalem.
Okay.
Right? So we know that the average Jew who's open-minded will listen to what we're saying. Whereas the Talmudic person is going to have, you know, the hair standing up in the back of their necks because they're being exposed. Because our message to Jews is that the Talmud is a secret occult doctrine of Israelite pharaohs of Egypt that has very little to do with you and your Torah.
Yeah.
And your people are being massacred today under this lie that you're believing in and falling for. Except I'm glad to see that many Jews in America, you know, are not falling for it and they're standing up against it.
Yeah. And an obvious question here is, of course, I mean, the Temple Mount that is there now. I mean, how this is this is supposed to be, I guess, the third wall that is there. I'm referring to part of the third temple, right, or the second?
I think it's the second, isn't it? And the third's meant to come.
Ah, that's right.
Something
yeah,
like that.
And I mean, do we know how old this is?
Oh, these are recent. These are recent concoctions. Every time that they dug down underneath, because archaeology always wants to date something by looking at what's underneath. That's traditional.
Yeah. Yeah.
But every time they've dug down under Caesarea, or every time they've dug down under where they say that these other places are, like Megiddo, or Petra, or any of these famous places all over the Middle East, especially in the Holy Land, don't you see there's dead silence, Henrik? The very fact that they don't come forward and say, look, we found the actual foundations of the Temple of Solomon. Hey, we found, you know, the actual Temple Mount. We found Herod's castle. You never actually see anything coming forward, even on the Christian broadcasting networks here. Because every time they dig down there, they're finding stuff that is not, cannot be shown to be Israelite or what we're laughingly calling Jewish in origin. It's either Celtic or Phoenician, you see, or Egyptian or some other race. Like Etruscan. So the point being that if anyone who studied archaeology for 5 minutes, you're not going to find any Israelite citadels or cities or towns or villages or anything, because they don't exist, because the whole thing is a myth. Douglas Reed, and this is a man I wish that all people would do a internet search on or would read his great book, Controversy of Zion. He says in that book, the adoption of the name Israel by the Zionist state, which set up in Palestine in 1948, was a transparent false pretense. Now, we've already discussed this, Henrik, remember?
Yeah.
About how can Jews accept that you dare have a state of Israel? Why don't you call it state of Judah, or state of Levi, or state of Judah, or state of Zion?
Mm-hmm.
Since we understand, by their own Jewish history, that the 10 tribes of Israel have assimilated into the West and are perfectly assimilated. So we're talking about hijacking terms and we're talking about deception. Here it is in our faith.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that, look, even back then the term Israel didn't even mean what it meant.
Yeah.
Back when the term first came into use at the time of the Pharaoh Meremta, when they wrote that they're fighting enemies who are being crushed now under that name, they're not talking about wild vagabonds that they have to fight in Canaan. That was never a threat to Egypt.
Yeah.
They're talking about Egyptian dynasties who are running madly to other peoples, trying to rustle up armies, who are desperate to fund mercenaries, who are taking every kind of disgruntled person, who are doing black politics within Egypt to try and come and unsettle the throne there again so that they can restore themselves to the throne of Egypt. Because the rest of the world is unimportant to these people. What they want is Egypt, Egypt being the most powerful civilization at that time. So you have deadly enemies working from within and working from without. who still have people following, you know, them from within. These are old Hyksos invaders from many thousands of years previous, that the Egyptians have already thrown out of power. They're not worried about any other invaders at all. This is another big lie. The invaders that they were worried about, that kept their country in subjugation for nearly 300 to 400 years, they'd already dealt with successfully. The Hyksos people, these Israelite pharaohs that I'm talking about. So Egypt was taking a breather. Now, here's another interesting statement from Douglas Reed. He says, the Encyclopedia Britannica says that Judaism developed long after the Israelites had merged themselves with mankind. So that's history. Now we're talking factual history. That what you think Judaism is, which I'm always saying to people, is Leviticalism, which is Pharisaism, which is Gaonism. This is something that developed ages after the term Israel was used.
Yeah.
They're finding this out now. Madame Blavatsky said that, nay, not only is there no proof of the 12 tribes of Israel ever having existed, but Herodotus, the most accurate of historians, who was in Assyria when Ezra flourished, never mentions the Israelites at all. How is this possible? You see? So again, a dearth of information in the historians that we're meant to trust. And you see, today, modern Christians and modern Jews will always be pointing to these spurious ancient historians, you see, to justify their existence. Now, here's Douglas Reed again, Henrik. He says, anything like a purebred tribe of Judah must have disappeared some centuries before Christ at the latest. So that even those Jews today who say, okay, we accept that the 10 tribes of Israel have merged into the West. We descend from the two tribes, or, you know, the tribes of Judah and Levi and Benjamin and so on. But the experts are saying, look, even that strain, if it ever existed at all, has long since, you know, gone from the world as an identity, as an ethnic group. So, again, if people are listening to us for the first time, let's understand. You can be a Jew today in the same way that you could be a Christian today, is in the same way that a person can convert to Shintoism today, is by conversion, religious conversion. Yeah. And just because your ancestors in the 19th, 18th, 17th, 16th, and 15th century, perhaps, converted to a religion, does not mean that you're ethnically or racially connected to the people who are claimed to be of that religion in the beginning.
Yeah,
and if you are taught to believe that, then let's ask a question: who would be wanting you to think that? Who wants you to think that by mere conversion, where 80% of the world's Jews are Ashkenaz Jews, Yiddish-speaking Jews out of the Turco-Mongolic stock, the so-called lost 13th tribe, who would want you to believe that you are actually directly connected, with no evidence whatsoever, to the old tribes from the Middle East? Who would want you to think that? Who benefits from this? Because if they can have you believe that, then they can have you go back to Israel and displace a native people there who have more right to that land than you do. They can fund the rise of Zionism, a political, basically terrorist organization, who then comes up upon you telling, this one terrorist organization says, listen, world, listen, United States of America, you've got to protect us from terrorists. We're a terrorist organization. And we need you to protect us from other terrorists. And the world turns around and goes, absolutely, we'll help you do that. Did they help Gaddafi do that? You know, did America run and help, you know, Gaddafi or any other organization on paper to do that? Of course they wouldn't.
No. Oh, my God. It's a mess. I mean, oh, my God.
The mess is the human, you know, craziness.
Yeah.
Listen to what Connor McAdari, here's one of the greatest scholars that ever lived, he said, Hebrew was never spoken by the Aramaic people of Syria, the so-called Jews, or by the people of other countries. It was used by the ancient Irish priesthood of Iessa, precisely as Latin is used today by the Roman church to impress its multitude. Yeah. So we've got many, many, many interesting questions here. I want to get to a couple more quotes from Thompson. He says here, Palestine never developed. Now listen to this very carefully. Palestine never developed a political power of any great international significance. It was always so divided by its many small regions that it never developed a common history except when it was controlled by some power from outside, such as Egypt, Assyria, and Babylon. So in other words, it was an outpost of major cultures. High culture, as expressed in art, architecture, literature, and pageant, hardly existed. Most of what has survived is either foreign in origins or derivative of Phoenicia on the Syrian coast. Now, the Phoenicians, as we said before, Henrik, were Irish, were Celtic. Sometimes they were Celtic, you know, several times removed. They were Irish several times removed, but they were Celtic nonetheless. They inhabited Iran, which is exactly the same word as the old name for Ireland, Iran, or Erin. The sacred land, or the land of the sacred people, meaning the land that the sacred people were using for various, you know, outposts and ports and educational purposes. There was a worldwide college of the Druids at that time. So settlements grew up. Places like Caesarea are built over ancient Celtic sites. Places like Petra, that they always tell you so mysterious they can never work out who built it. It's very easy to work out who built it.
Yeah.
It's the civilized, educated ones from the ancient times that the Etruscans and the Phoenicians and the Syrians and the Iranians all had married in with and merged with, and who absolutely named their countries after the people of the West. Do you know the word Syria literally means people of the West, the land of the Western ones?
Oh, really?
That's what the word means.
Ah, interesting.
Now we have...
Michael, before we... what do you say if we do a little break and do our contest?
People call in, so it can interrupt the flow of the show. Why don't we do the contest in the last, like, 10 minutes?
Sure, sure. No problem.
So then we're not constantly interrupted, because this content is very important to get across. We have such precious time.
I agree. Let's do that, of course. Please continue.
So we'll definitely do the contest.
Hello, Michael. Are you there?
Yeah. Did you want to take a break? Or no, should we just go on?
No, let's go on, and let's do it at the end. So it would be great. Yeah.
This would be good now. So just keep an eye on it. We'll do it the last, like, 10 or 11 minutes before the end.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, here's Professor Thompson himself. And, of course, this man wrote a book called The Mythic Past, Biblical Archaeology and the Myth of Israel. And this, in this one book, you can save you reading volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of lies. Now, Professor Thompson says that Jerusalem's history, he's talking about Jerusalem specifically now, Jerusalem's history remains impossible to write. Although the Egyptian Amarna letters, which give us correspondence between Palestine's petty princes and kings and the Egyptian pharaoh of the late 14th and early 18th centuries, tells us much about the town of Urasalim. There's a place called Urasalim, and about its patron, we know nothing about this town from archaeology. We are not even certain where it was located, though we have every reason to believe that it was at the place they're saying is Jerusalem. But they've never discovered it. So the forensic evidence, so to speak, isn't there. He also goes on to say there could not have been a kingdom for any kind of Saul or David to be king of, simply because there was not enough people. Not only did a state of Judah not yet exist, we have no evidence of there having been any political force anywhere in Palestine that was large enough or developed enough to have been capable of unifying the many economies and regions of this land. And at this time, Palestine was far less unified than it had been for more than 1,000 years. The Jerusalem of the 10th century can hardly be spoken of historically. If it exists at all, and years of excavations have found no trace of a 10th century town, it was still centuries from having the capacity of challenging any of the dozen or more powerful autonomous towns of Palestine.
Yeah.
So those people who have been kind of questioning in their minds about where is the evidence, why does the Bible not go into all the minutiae that would be needed if they were a true civilization? Because when you go into studying the Hittites or the Babylonians and the Sumerian scrolls, all you find is endless tablets about selling sheep and the law of the time and the building of walls and how the commerce was done and all this unbelievable minutia,
yeah,
which you would expect from a thriving civilization.
Yeah.
You know, all the little imbroglios and who's being taken to court today, you see, and what's going on and what the latest news is and how the war is going.
Yeah, of course.
And in the Bible, none of this is there. It's just a bunch of scattered disinformation that when you take a piece of it and try to go and find some historical evidence, none is to be discovered. He goes on to say, or here's a Professor Jay Perry, in his book called The Growth of Civilization, he says, there are no signs of Paleolithic man in the parts of Mesopotamia where civilization can be first detected, the region being generally young. So let me read that one again for people who are in a delirium. This one sentence can wake them up. There are no signs of Paleolithic man. This is Stone Age man. Where all, you know, Stone Age is one, it's all meant to have begun, right?
Yeah.
There are no signs of Paleolithic man in the parts of Mesopotamia, and that's a big area, where civilization can be first detected, the region being generally young. Now, the same scholars will tell you that Ireland is the oldest civilization known to man, hands down, no questions asked.
Yeah.
So then what have we been buying into? He says, the Bible knows nothing, or nearly nothing, of those of most of the great transforming events of Palestine's history.
Hmm.
Of historical causes, it knows only one, Palestine's ancient deity, Yahweh. It knows nearly nothing of the great droughts that changed the course of Palestine's world for centuries, and it is equally ignorant of the region's great historical battles at Megiddo, Kadesh, and Lachish. The Bible tells us nothing directly of 400 years of Egyptian presence, nor can it take any role in teaching us anything about the wasteful competition for the Jezreel area in the early Iron Age, or about the forced sectarianization of nomads along Palestinian southern bank. So here it's the reverse of what I'm saying. All those things that these archaeologists and the biblical and historical scholars know that did happen, because they've learned it from the records of other local people, the Bible never mentions it. So the things that the Bible mentions, nobody can find. And the things that they know happened in the area, the Bible never mentions. But people are going to believe it, right? Well, it's the same thing as you turn on the television today, CNN or ABC News, you know?
Yeah.
People believe a moon landing happened.
That's,
well, that's great, because it didn't.
That's interesting. Yeah.
And that was from Professor Thompson. Then he goes on to say, one of the most striking and wonderful things about an historian like Josephus, and this is so important, Henrik. He says, one of the most important things about a historian like Josephus, and he has the word historian in parentheses, is that he knows almost nothing about the past that we ourselves do not already know from other sources. Now look at this. When an account he gives of a supposed event of two centuries earlier, in his words, confirms that something we can read in other works, it is only because he has copied it or paraphrased it. Josephus has been well described as a person that you wouldn't buy a used car from.
Ouch.
You can't get further up the totem pole than these kinds of men.
Yeah.
And he's telling you that now that because we have so much documentation, that anything that you find in Josephus, we have the sources of where he took it from.
Mm.
In other words, he's a plagiarist. In other words, his history isn't worth 2 cents. In other words, this was a guy with a nice big bank balance that was set behind a desk, and he was fed information that is now called history.
When do you think that this was written?
This was written either after the time, or it was written during the time that they say that these people existed, but that these were people who were agents of people who were giving them the history to write.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I've always maintained that the Bible is either two things. It is the careful biography of the true Atonist people that we're talking about. But
yeah.
They used it like a screenplay, just in the same way that they say that Shakespeare's plays conceal many messages about alchemy and mysticism and certain bizarre characters who existed, you see. So I believe the Bible is the same way. I do believe that some of the characters of the Bible existed.
Yeah.
And I do even believe that some of the events that took place existed. But they are carefully transmogrified accounts to talk about a different dramatis personae that we have been addressing in these shows, but not the one that people think about when they're thinking of Paul and Saul and Peter, you see. And these are, a lot of them are astrological archetypes. And a lot of them are characters well-dressed for the 18th dynasty pharaohs and other great dignitaries that are sacred to the cult of Aton. It's their holy book. And it talks about the events, their Yahweh, their burning bush. All of this stuff is their particular iconography. But these people are megalomaniacs. They have insisted that Jewish people today and Christian people buy into this personal biography as a religion.
Mm.
And you know, as you see on the talk that I did in L.A., people will do it because our forefathers only lived for a few years.
Yeah.
And we haven't got too much brains. There's not too many enlightened people around. So, of course, we will accept this kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
But the point being that these individuals, as many, and not just Josephus, but many others,
yeah,
they are already stealing histories from other people. So it's like everybody at school comparing each other's works.
Hmm.
And then what happens is, down through time, the universities and the scholars put before us, because it looks old to us.
Yeah.
So they're saying, listen, this is aged with time. You accept this grape juice as the finest wine, all right? Because we've kept it buried down here for years. Doesn't mean it's wine, but they're going to tell everybody, nobody's ever tasted any wine, so they're going to believe that this grape juice is the real thing.
Yeah.
And of course, it's under pain of death. You don't even have a choice.
No.
Now it says here, he says that they did not hesitate to change their sources and reconstruct the past whenever there were gaps in their knowledge, or indeed in any manner that they saw fit. As we have grown more aware of such typical characteristics, the history of Israel has grown less and less acceptable. Historical scholarship's indolent habit of offering paraphrases of ancient historians and correcting them only when evidence proves them wrong will no longer do. So the mess of history that we have got is people taking original histories of other peoples and other theocracies and other cults, yeah, adapting it. There's a term called adaptation. You can see it on the end of any movie, and often at the beginning of a movie they'll say, this movie is adapted, but it doesn't bear any resemblance to any characters living or dead.
Yeah.
Well, when you pick up a Bible, and when you listen to any of the bunk coming down from any priestly source, it is such adaptation. Look up the word in the dictionary. Go to dictionary.com and look up the word adaptation.
Hmm.
And also look up the term Reverend Robert Taylor, or any of the people that I deal with on my website who did know this, who were from within the church, and who desperately tried to tell people the true history. Alvin Boyd Kuhn, you know, Godfrey Higgins, Gerald Massey, you know, the list goes on, Shwala DeLubitsch, anyone who tried to say, listen, we are, as archaeologists, as people who've been out in the field, we sense that something's wrong, let us tell you the true story. Well, like the Reverend Taylor, they end up in the jail, locked up, literally locked up. Their liberty taken away from them, because they're not going to preach astro-theological sermons. They're not going to talk about ancient cults. We don't want to know about ancient cults. We don't want to hear you talking about how the symbols of Judaism are the symbols of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
You must be out of your mind. We're amazed that you even worked out the fact that we've been having a historical deception.
Yeah.
That worries us enough, and now we're certainly not going to allow you to tell the true story. If we say in the Bible that biblical patriarchs lived for 800 years, Henrik, okay, this is a lifespan of 800 years, and this has been in the Bible, you accept it. It doesn't matter if you've never met anybody that has lived 800 years, you're going to accept what we've just said. It doesn't matter if you know, if you've done archaeological research to find out that there was never enough water or fresh water, or, you know, no types of oases could have existed in Iran during the times when they say that Ur and Chaldea and all of these places existed. There's no civilizations could have flourished in exactly the places that they tell you that Abraham came from. But that doesn't matter. We're telling you to believe it, and you will believe it. That's all that matters.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's a fine line between, you know, being able to pick, study the Bible for what it is, because I know that you refer many times to in your works, in your Origins and Oracle series, to the Bible, because there are some very interesting passages in that, and at the same time, as you say, being able to see through the more obvious light that you know form the religion and the world we live in today.
Oh, because as I've said this, and I've been asked this question many times, when you quote from the Bible, you're not quoting from the Christian Bible. You're quoting, as I told you, these people plagiarized the traditions and the religions and the theology and the wisdom, also the wisdom, of previous peoples. Phoenicians, you see?
Yeah. Yeah.
Assyrians, Egyptians. When I'm quoting from the Bible, I in my mind, I'm quoting from Egyptian history.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't bother me to quote from the Bible.
No.
My comments about the history of the Bible are still legitimate, and I can still be quoting from the Bible because I'm in no delusion. In my mind, I know exactly what I'm quoting from. I'm quoting from elders of elder wisdom that came out of previous times before the distortion. Now, the truth still exists as truth. This is why when I'm addressing Jews and addressing Christians, I'm saying, you know something? You're a better Jew and you're a better Christian when you accept the historical, archaeological, factual truth about your own religions. I'm not threatening your religion. I'm purifying it. Isn't it time?
Yeah.
The Mormons can come along and create a perfectly brand new religion. The Jehovah's Witnesses can come along and create a perfectly brand new religion. Baha'ism can spring out of the ground. But nobody can come along and say, listen, we got to sanitize what we know about Christianity and Judaism so that it's sane and that it's moral and that it's something you want to teach your children.
Yeah.
And here's Percy Graves. He's a major detergent called Percy Graves. Let's sprinkle some of him on you because it'll polish. They don't want it to be polished because we got a Vatican structure here. We got Opus Dei. We got a whole Jesuit, mind control gig happening here, which is wanting to keep people in absolute servitude. They don't want to have it cleaned up and cleared of all its filthy debris. They want to hand this bunk to future generations so that future generations are in the same absolute despicable mess as the rest of us are in. This is unacceptable to me, you see, that this goes on.
Yeah.
I don't believe it.
As long as people are arguing about it, too, I guess it serves an agenda that people never will get anywhere with it.
The argument is very important. You see, remember, they put it together so fast, Hendrik, it shows me that they didn't even really care about too much of the historical accuracy. They put it together knowing that it would create a conflict. And that was the main thing. Now, if people are ordering Professor Thompson's book, in the meantime, if they go to my Astrotheology page 1 and 2, you will find sections there called, I may find the exact link, The Hidden Roots of Judaism is one of them. And let me see, Did the Biblical Israel Exist? Go to Astrotheology page 1, and you'll see the links there in the middle. Did the Biblical Israel Exist? And other... like the Hidden Roots of Judaism, and other areas of that page that feature Professor Thompson's work while you're waiting for his book. But I absolutely want people to get that book. Also, if people go to Astrotheology page 1 and click on the link called The Scarlet Thread, you will see an incredible smorgasbord of pictures there that show Akhenaten as the Lion of Judea, the original Lion of Judea, so that again, as you said so correctly, Hendrik, where do these iconographs, where do these mythographs come from in the Bible?
Yeah.
They're as old as the pyramids. You know, the hymns of Solomon, the Psalms of Solomon, all go back to Imhotep. They're plagiarizations and copies of the great poetry of High Egypt. You know, so a lot of this stuff has already been accepted.
Yeah,
so we're inching forward. We're inching forward to the point where, you know, we're going to have to know what on earth really was going on.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm looking at the clock here, Michael. If we're going to be able to squeeze in the contest, let's do it right now. We've got about 6 minutes.
Okay, well, the contest is a very simple question. Let me get to it. And that is that we've talked in previous programs about...
I can give out the number first, Michael, so people will be able to be ready here. Call 1-877-876-5227. Again, that's 1-877-876-5227. 5227, and if you think you got the right answer, call us in if we're able to squeeze it in here. So go ahead, Michael.
Okay, we've said that Christianity was born in Egypt during the 18th dynasty, and that certain of the temples of Akhenaten were designed in the cross. And the temple of Luxor and many of the other temples of Egypt were the first temples that were designed to represent the shape of the cross, and it's where Christianity originally got this cruciform shape. But the great city that Akhenaten built, his dream child, his brain child, that was meant to be the central city of the sun, I want to know what the name of that city was.
Ah.
There's a very important city in Egypt that Akhenaten literally moved to build. He moved out of Thebes. He moved away. One of the most crucial things that he did, you see, when he broke off from the old cult of Ra, is that he also moved territory. He moved out of Thebes, he moved away from the traditional lands, and he went to build himself a great temple. And it is from this temple that the modern Judeo-Christianity was born. And I go into this in depth because, listen, at this particular temple of Akhenaten, that is, do you remember I was telling you that Akhenaten himself was raised in Goshen by the Israelite pharaohs?
Yeah.
And the Israelite peoples and many of the ladies-in-waiting. There was a lot of interbreeding during the Hyksos. I mean, the Hyksos people who were Israelites, these Israelite pharaohs, Levitical pharaohs, they dominated Egypt. So even, and these people had great seniority in the great churches of the sun. Okay, that's why they were so powerful. That's why we have a Christianity today. It's because the solar cult of Egypt was permeated by these Hyksos pharaohs who were alien and foreign to Egypt and were finally ousted. But when Akhenaten opened his temple, they were very, very powerful. And this is the place that I'm talking about is where the real essence of Judeo-Christianity began. So it's not just, oh, yes, I think when people say Judeo-Christianity is Egyptian, you know, like they maybe speak very vaguely about that. Yeah. We have to understand, no, it came from a specific pharaoh. It came from specific philosophy. It had a specific date of birth, and it even had a specific location from which it rose. So if anybody can answer the actual name of the temple of light that Akhenaten built, then they win the contest.
Ah, interesting. So this is central here. So very good question.
Yeah, very central. Yeah,
and,
yeah.
If we have anyone out there who think that they got right answer, again the number is 1-877-876-5227. And if you're calling from outside the U.S., just add 001 in front of that number. So. Okay, we got just about 3 minutes left here, Michael. Time goes so fast.
I know.
Where do you want to lead us into here?
Well, we got a lot done, and you know, next week we can definitely go into precise detail about the individual pharaohs themselves.
Yeah.
And how the actual dramatis personae works. It was no good explaining all that, you know, without showing the whole background of what we're talking about. And you know, just again to say that we're talking about the origins of Judeo-Christianity here. Egypt was one of the first countries that ever became Christianized. You know that?
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Yeah, people, you know, who go to Sunday school every day, or history, studying the Christian history, don't know that Alexandria.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hello, we got a caller.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Aaron from Oregon.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome.
I had an answer for you. I was wondering if it was the Temple of Solomon.
No, Aaron, it's not the Temple of Solomon. The Temple of Solomon is a pretty good answer because you're on the right track. But the Temple of Solomon came about several hundred years, if not a thousand years, after the time that I'm talking about. Akhenaten lived in the 1400s B.C., and at that time he built a very important temple that the Temple of Solomon is based on later on.
Okay, thank you.
But it's not the actual Temple of Solomon itself. Anyway, you're welcome to try again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your call. Thank you.
Now, Henrik, people can also email you after the show is over for the right answer, right?
That is correct. Just drop me a mail. The address is radio@redicecreations.com. Again, that's radio@redicecreations.com. And the first answer that we receive that is the correct one will win. So that is the contest is ongoing here. So we got just about 1 minute left. So where do you want
to? Well, we'll leave it there. Again, just I want to express thanks a lot for this. I definitely want people to pick up, go and study my Astrotheology page one and find out the incredible lie. And with the knowledge that Professor Thompson has written, you are in a state to be able to defend yourself against this tidal wave of lies, which has literally been tranquilized. People are just believing this nonsense about the archaeological ruins. They don't exist. They literally do not exist, because if they did exist, we would have been hearing it rammed down our throats for hundreds of years now. If there's been a sort of a silence based on the archaeological ruins of the holy chosen people, there's a reason for it. It's because those ruins do not exist. But there are ruins there which do exist, and those are not Israelite in nature. They are Egyptian, and they're Phoenician, and they're Celtic. And this is never to be forgotten when we're starting to pose the greater question of where the origins of civilization really began.
Yeah, and this stuff, again, will affect even the most current events so dramatically. So, I mean,
sure it does.
It's so important also. So.
Yeah, if you're going to fight and die, go ahead. But at least fight and die for something that's logical, rational, and sane, and actually has a history.
Yeah.
And that might mean something, and not for some Walt Disney fiction that they've created in Hollywood.
Exactly. All right, Michael, we got no time left here, so I want to thank you so much for coming on, and let's continue this down the road. And we'll talk more when we do our next show, okay?
Right, very soon. Thank you so much again for the opportunity.
Thank you, Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, everyone listening, thank you so much. You have been listening to Red Ice Radio. And again, if you want to participate in the contest that is still ongoing, mail me. The address is radio@redicecreations.com. This has been Henrik Holmgren signing out. Bye-bye.